Michael?
Hi there.
Hi, how do we refer to you? What do you want me to call you?
You can call me whatever you like, but Michael Sealand is normally quite good.
All right, Michael Sealand. Cool. All right, we're back in about 40 seconds, and we're very interested in what you're doing. We've been following you since 2000. You know, the our website, every now and then, whenever there's news we put up and a lot of stuff's going on, we're all pirated up here, so you're right in line with this. And I remember in 2000, something was going on, made the news, and we go, yep, we know where this is going. So
I heard about this stuff in the 90s because my dad got himself a title.
Really? What did he get?
I don't know, Lord or something. Prince? I have no idea.
Yeah, we're going to be getting lots of princes and lords and stuff doing here. Okay, here we go. All right, we'll be back in 10 seconds.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah! No fear! No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUtiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Oh, we have Davi Barker sitting in. No, we're another independence declaring kind of guy, but man, our candle's kind of dim compared to Michael of Sealand. Michael of Sealand, the Principality of Sealand. Now, Michael, I want to, been covering you since 2000. I remember, hit the news in LA Times, and we were going, oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But what I did not know is that this started in the 60s. Now, in this first segment, we only got four segments, and I wanted, there's a bunch of questions we have about your relationship with other governments, but we want to get in real quick. Give me a 10-minute go monologue on the creation of Sealand, who you were, how you got it, and what, the pirate radio thing. Michael, please go.
Well, back in the early 60s, my father got involved with a phenomenon called pirate radio. Basically, there was no commercial radio in the UK. There was no pop music for the kids. There was no advertising. There was no disc jockeys. It was just crummy chamber music and crummy stories and things. So he got involved with this phenomenon where they put transmitters on ships and some of these wartime fortresses outside of territorial limits in the North Sea. And they were broadcasting into UK and broadcasting the kind of music the kids wanted to hear. And people advertised on them, and it was going really well. But the government didn't like it. The British government didn't like it because they don't like anything they can't control, and they have no control at all about the content of these radio stations. At the time, you'll recall, the IRA were performing in Ireland and one thing and the other, and I think they were concerned that the stations might go political. So they twisted and turned, and they stretched territorial limits, and they drew lines across the mouth of the Thames estuary, and eventually they got most of the stations on the forts. They managed to prosecute them under what they called the Marine Offences Act.
Okay, how many of these forts were there?
Let me think. In the Thames, there was three army forts, and the army forts were different to Sealand. The army forts were seven independent towers set out in the same kind of formation. They were set at an anti-aircraft battery on the shore in a field with the searchlights to one side and the guns in certain positions. And they took them out. They didn't float them out. They carried them out on barges and lowered them down by hand winches. I mean, it was huge. I mean, amazing feat, lowering them down with these hand winches over many, many hours. And they set them up so close to each other that the catwalks fitted. I mean, they were a bit telescopic, but not indefinitely. It was very, very cleverly done. And they were manned by the army, and they had 3.7 surface-to-air guns on them. And they were built to engage ships and also aircraft. The reason these forts were put in place was because the Germans used to use the Thames estuary to follow, for navigation before GPS, obviously, to follow the Thames up to London and try and, you know, bomb the heart out of the English people and bomb London and the docks, of course, at London, where the supplies were coming in from the United States.
With submarines?
No, these were you know, aircraft bombers, and they dropped magnetic mines as well in the nighttime.
Okay. So this was an anti-aircraft defense that they had these platforms with men and material and anti-aircraft guns and whatever, and some of them were inside because you were adjudicated where they had jurisdiction over you guys, and you go, we're outside the three. Well, first you went onto another one that they took from you, and then you moved to one outside the three-mile limit, and that is Sealand now, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, we were originally on the Knock John Fort, which is not like the ones I've just described. Sealand and is a naval fortress, and they put the naval fortresses further out to sea across the mouth of the estuary. But they brought in a law, an international law, where they could draw a line across the mouth of the Thames estuary, and it's wide. You know, off the top of my head, I can't tell you how wide, yeah. Maybe 40 miles wide. And they drew a line across that. So while the other forts were more than 3 miles out, they're inside what was called the Bay Enclosure Line. So these guys got prosecuted, my father as well. So he looked around for a better jurisdiction, and he found there was this fort, which was called the Rough Towers, or there was another one called the Sunk Head Forts. So we moved out to the Rough Towers, and instead of putting the radio station back on the air, my father had the idea, a bizarre idea possibly, of declaring independence. Which he did in the 2nd of September 1967. And when he declared independence, the Navy and the Marines went out to the Sunkhead Forts, which was in the same sort of physical area, well outside of territorial limits, and they blew it up. And we could see it go up. It was an amazing sight. And they came past on a naval tug and shouted up, "You're next." So, interesting times.
Okay. Now, there's a point. One, are you the son?
I am the son.
Okay, so you're the one that shot the gun.
I've shot many guns.
No. You know what I'm talking about. You know, when they're coming, when they came around, they're taunting you, and you're next, and somebody fired a shot across their bow or something of something. You know, was that you?
That was me, yeah.
Okay, what did you fire? A .22, a howitzer? I mean, it never says.
A Walther P-38, a 9mm Walther P-38. But my father had taken up a dead German during the war.
So you take this Walther and you go bang. Well, ooh, they take off, and now, oh, did Dad give you a spanking on that one for shooting at British ships?
No, not at all. I asked my father many times, you know, if we get attacked, what should I do, Dad? I mean, bear in mind at that time I was 14, maybe just 15, and he said, "Well, son, you must make up your own decision at the time." And I'm looking for a bit of guidance here, but he didn't actually give it to me. So anyway, he couldn't tell me.
So you fired your firearm. Now, that put you in court. Tell me about that experience and what came out of that.
Well, it was two or three warning shots across the bow, and it put us in court. And, first of all, it was a magistrate's court, which is the lowest court in the land. And the charges were that you, Michael Bates, fired a 2.2 pistol, which it wasn't, but I believe we said it was, inside the jurisdiction of Essex Magistrates Court. So, and then the judge decided he didn't have the authority to hear the case. So it went to Essex Assizes, which is one of those courts where the hanging judge kind of comes out wearing the wigs and the red coats and long red coats and these. And they started going on about the same thing within the jurisdiction, which was Magistrates Court or Essex Magistrates Court, whatever it was. And our QC said, no, we wish to discuss jurisdiction first. So we went on all day long about jurisdiction until the court found that we were outside the jurisdiction of British law. And many things were brought up, including the possibility that there were two channel swimmers swimming across the channel, and one got fed up with the other one because he was going to win, so he pushed him under and he grounds him. Under what jurisdiction would the case be held? Because there's all sorts of laws to do with onboard ships and this, that, and the other, and navy. But you know, when there's no ship involved and this, that, and the other, the piracy thing is out the window, and you know, it becomes a lot more complicated in the rule of law.
Okay, now on this is a floating platform. Is it chained to the ocean bed somehow or something?
No. It's not floating at all. No, it was it was built in Gravesend, up near London, east of London.
Go ahead and finish your thought. So it's anchored to the seabed. You know, had the pylons or something. How is it done?
It was built in Gravesend in a dry dock, floated out of the dry dock. It's a fortress. Floated out of the dry dock and towed by several tugs down the river out to sea, and peacocks were opened at one end of it, and it had a weir system inside this barge it sat on. And the idea was it flooded and then...
Okay, hold on a second. We'll be right back.
Exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government, the real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Okay, Michael, I want to get into the design of it real quick now, and you know, but I still want to get in this. We kind of, you know, they don't have jurisdiction. So now, okay, they don't have jurisdiction. Now, what do we do? And then you went through that, and the construction of it. Go ahead and explain now, for the archive, exactly how this. It is hard mounted onto the seabed. Yes or no?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Both pylons, or one, or it pivots, or it's just. And how is it connected to the seabed?
No. It was floated. The whole thing. The
no, I understand itself. That. And then it's sunk instead. I want to know how it is connected to the seabed.
It was sunk, like a ship was sunk or something. It was sunk in place.
Well, you had some kind of leveling thing. Is it connected? Do you ever skin dive down there? How deep is it? How does it just sit there? Does it move at all? Does it have, you know, some kind of pins or pylons or chain? I mean, it's got to be connected somehow.
It was, the ground was, they laid chalk down on the ground where it was to be set. It was buoyed off, so they put it in the right spot, so it was nice and flat and level. And it was, as I was explaining to you, it was sunk, one end was sunk, and as it went down, water poured over the weir in this barge, and the other end, so until eventually it came level. But where they went wrong with this one was they gave the Navy the job of removing the, they had wooden, like plywood boards around the top of the gunwale of the rail of this barge to stop waves breaking over it. And they told them to remove all the wood before they opened the seacocks, but the Navy being the Navy got halfway through removing the wood and thought, oh, stuff it, we can't be bothered with this. And they opened the seacocks. Consequently, the thing, as it started to sink, skewed over on one side and nearly fell over. And then a corner of the actual barge it sits on must have hit the ground. There's a video of it. There is a video of it on YouTube.
Okay, and now if I was to, you know, go from the sea level, you know, it goes up and down on the pylons. How much? Is it the high and low tide is what, 8 feet, 10 feet, 12 feet? What is it?
It's rise and fall of 18 foot on the...
Wow, okay. So below the low tide, you know, level, down to the bottom where it actually touches the seabed is how far?
Something like 25 feet at the lowest spring tides.
Really? Okay, so there's not like, you know, they can't bring up a big giant cruiser next to you or something, right? You know, you're not going to have, you know, a...
At the top of the tide, there's like... you know, there's a lot of water there, like nearly 60 foot of water there. So yes, you could do.
Well, I'm just saying, like a luxury cruise liner can't go up there and the bottom never touch. You know, but all right, here we're coming back. Here we go.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip in on the right side of the page at LRN.FM. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. 2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Song on pirate radio, you know, this is fighting in the streets or on the sea, you know, this is very interesting. Now in the break I was trying to get a, you know, beat on what the physical, you know, aspects of this. They built it in dry dock, they tow it out, the tide goes up and down a difference of 18 feet from high to low tide. At low tide down to the base, you know, is like 25 feet. So at high tide, you know, it's like more, you know, 40, 50, 60 feet. So it's not like you got a cruise liner that can just pull up next to them and sit there for a week. You know, I mean, it's, you know, relatively shallow. You can, I guess you can throw on your scuba and go down to check the bottom of whatever, you know. So this is hard mounted onto the sea floor and it's there and it's big, giant, and kind of the waves are. So when you have a storm in the North Sea freaking storm, when that comes through, how does that impact you guys? You just, you're cool, it doesn't make much movement?
Well, first of all, when you say you can't get ships near it, I mean, we had a few warships near it, so, and a few ferries as well, so over the years, so, you know, it gets relatively deep. These things don't actually draw that much water, these ships we're talking about. But anyway, when the weather's really bad, it has a certain amount of movement, which is probably just as well, otherwise we'd break. And now and again, a wave would whistle up one of the towers and slap underneath the platform.
Ooh.
But the tower's got bed. There's seven floors in each tower.
Well, there have been, I mean, yeah, that's one thing that got you, you know, going to court was you have a ship coming whizzing by you, you're next, and everything, and you start, oh, yeah, well, I got my pistol, and bang, 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 and I'm 14, 15 years old, and then your mama. And they go, yeah, well, let's go to court. But that's probably to your advantage in the long run because they gave, you know, the decision that you were outside of UK's jurisdiction. So then you're going, ooh, what happened after that?
Well, then we I think, yeah, by then we declared independence, hadn't we? And then we started printing stamps and having stamps made and coins. We had coins made in the Mexican Mint and passports and the other general paraphernalia of state, you know, flag, anthem. Off we went.
Okay, so now I remember some of this. It's called the Principality of Sealand, and the website is sealandgov.org, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, sealandgov, G-O-V, .org, and Principality of Sealand. Now, your father, you know, once they declared sovereign, it's us, and kind of, now I give myself the title of, and my wife is now Princess Joan. You just get over it. That's her name now. So now you want to get titles and so on. So where would your revenue come from? I mean, I'm sure. Okay, I tell you, this is what we thought. It's year 2000. We see this, you know, you got your own land out and you've been recognized as a nation. And tell us about that process. Who would you want to be recognized by? How would you go do it? What did you have to have? What were the criteria?
Well, I mean, under the Montevideo Convention, which President Roosevelt, President Roosevelt signed, the requirements of state are population, territory, government, and capacity went into relations with other states. All of those things we clearly could do and cover. I mean, no countries are keen to help us on our way. No one holds out the hand of friendship and really hasn't. So we were helped by the court case, and we were also helped by 1978, which no doubt we'll talk about later on. We had a visit by the German ambassador, and the reason the German ambassador visited us was because the British government wouldn't help them in their requirements. So they asked permission to visit, and they did. Now that is de facto recognition. You can't get around that one. Bloke turned up with a diplomatic passport. We searched him at the airport in case he was carrying weapons, which didn't make him very happy. In fact, he just about made steam come out of his ears. Put him on a helicopter and flew him out. You know, so that is the kind of, that is de facto recognition.
So, but was there, you had to have, did you have to have coin or stamp or army or something? Was there any requirements? And then if you filled out an application. Who was it to? Or was it just, hey, a German ambassador visited us. We're outside of jurisdiction. Screw y'all. We're a sovereign nation.
Well, a little bit like that, but not quite like that. I mean, obviously, if you're going to be a country, you have to have the trappings of state, don't you? Hence the stamps and the coins. We had to find a way of supporting ourselves, and eventually we've come to the, you know, we issue Lord and Lady titles and various other titles. I mean, it's not a new thing. 13th century French kings used to issue letters of nobility to for remuneration to fund their wars and their military campaigns around Europe. So it's not a new thing, but it works out okay for us, and it covers expenses and everything else. Cause it is a very expensive enterprise already over the years to take on.
Well, if I was to, I go, yeah, you know, I want a Sea Land passport. You give out passports?
We stopped giving out passports after 9/11. But having said that, only because we were trying to help the situation with people crossing borders. But we will be issuing passports again soon. We believe the world settled down a little bit, possibly not too much. But we will be issuing passports again very soon.
And have they been accepted? I mean, you go at the airport and you're like, yeah, whatever. You know, are they, you know, you on their list? Or are they going to be, oh, he's a Sea Land passport carrying, shoot him? I mean, you know, how do they view these?
Well, I don't believe they shoot you. I mean, really, all a passport is, if you read the small print in it, even the United States passport, is that you are asking other countries to safeguard, look after, and allow free passage of your. I used to travel all the time on my Sea Land passport. I've been to France, Germany, Holland, all over Europe. Pardon me. I've got copies of Sea Land passports that have been stamped at Heathrow Airport in England, used to get into the United States. I know, but obviously these days, obviously the situation's a bit more serious with travel documents, I suppose. People worry about it because all sorts of people are trying to cross borders.
It's definitely of interest. Now, you're making money on, this is what we thought. In 2000, I mean, I tell you what happened, how we knew about you. In 2000, we became aware of you in a newspaper article, and immediately what we were thinking, we're going, oh, I already know where this goes. Servers. You just have memory. You could have whatever gang, mob, government, private of a company, CEO of whatever the hell. I want to have my own servers that I can keep outside of any jurisdiction. How do extradite or get a warrant to go search whatever? And I go, if you could have someone, now this is 2000, this is before broadband and satellite really gets going and all that kind of stuff. But we were sitting there thinking, if you could really make some money if you stored data that anybody could get access to. And I'm thinking, you know, back then that became a thing and there was a problem. We're going to find out. And if not, can I do it now? You know, are you a Bitcoin miner using wave and solar technology?
That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, you're mining cryptocurrencies and so on. We're going to find out. Michael of Sea Land, when we come back in just a little bit.
Understanding your...
Yeah, this is fascinating. Now, that was, we'll sum it up when we come back on the live broadcast here, but I'm just wanting to understand, at that time, didn't you guys do something like that? You were having records or computer storage of something? Did that ever happen?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And the man didn't like it. You know, somebody complained about that or something. You know, can you tell that story?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, when we come back, we'll do that. Because that was the first thing that we were thinking. If you're outside of a jurisdiction and I can store data and, you know, transfer and be a node for and mine Bitcoin or whatever, that, you know, the man ain't going to like that. They just, because they don't like it. You're not allowed to, you deliberately duck. So they're like, nope, and be prudent at this juncture. So I go, okay, we'll do that. And then the other thing was, they were coming after you for something. And there was a guy, we do an annual conference called the Freedom Summit and freedomsummit.com. And I remember there was a gentleman that after 9/11 did a big boycott of Delta because Delta Airlines were giving out private information to law enforcement. And he, one of the first viral activists on the internet kind of thing. And one of the projects was Sealand, because they were doing something. He wanted to bring attention to that. And we had him come to our conference and explain it to everybody. Do you remember that instance? It was probably about 2002, 2003, 2004, around in there.
No, I don't recall any. I mean, obviously, I know all about Haven Co. I was very much involved with it, but I don't recall that particular.
Yeah, I can't remember what they. So how often is it that they, you know, kind of hassle you? I mean, what do you got to do to? You're definitely going to have somebody with a, you know, a ship and a shiny badge and a gun come explain it to you. What are some of the things that you're worried about?
No one comes with badges and guns anymore, and you know, tell them to piss off if they do. No one needs. We don't need to explain to us, so we're perfectly happy with where we are.
And there's nothing that you would do that, you know. Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, because I tell you, this is happening here in America. We have a lot. We're libertarian, anarchist, leave me aloneist, kind of, you're still voting, kind of, whatever people, all right? So we're looking at you. We've been using you as an example for years. So then we have the group, the Seasteading Project, and now they just got an agreement with French Polynesia to start doing exactly what you got, but they're more floating, I think. And, you know, out in off of French Polynesia with a lot of the precedents set by your effort. So I'm just wondering what precedents have been set. And when we come back, we'll do the computer server thing and what you can do to make. There's a lot when you're out of the you're Deep Space Nine. I mean, your space station of Kiss My Butt, and I'm out here and whatever, and I can, you know, I got, you know, water and seafood and oxygen, and I'm just sitting here. It's like a base on Earth to where they can just leave you alone. We had people come. They were going to do the same kind of thing as they're building piers and stuff out into the ocean from, like, you know, like Miami Beach or something like that. Out in the Caymans, they have a big hundreds of miles square area that the average depth is about, you know, 30 feet. So they could do a whole bunch of what you're talking about. They were going to build a big airport, and underneath it would be the condos for the initial workers, and then build a whole nation state, you know, whatever, like you guys got. And it's just, you know, it's disincentivized by the man, you know. So we're coming back in about 15 seconds. These are all the things that we're interested in, the sovereignty aspect, you know. So we'll be right back. Yep. Okay. Here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Independence. You know, one thing real quick I wanted to ask about, you know, some of the, you know, money-making opportunities for, you know, the man's not here. And, but the flag, you know, what constituted the colors? Why did you pick white, you know, red and black? Because why? Do you remember?
Well, my father would have told you if he was still around, bless him, that the red was for Roy, the black was for the days in pirate radio, and the white was for the... the fine and clear line of purity that we walk today.
Awesome.
With ever since tongue-in-cheek smile on his face.
Very cool. Okay, now, as you you know, you see there's opportunities for making money, there's opportunities providing a service, there's opportunities. And having this out in the middle of something, and the first thing we were thinking when we learned about you in 2000 is we go, as a matter of fact, we were in Anaheim, California at a Libertarian National Convention. And we're a bunch of libertarians sitting there, boom, and it hit the news. And I remember the movie The Patriot, you know, was out with Mel Gibson. You know, so we're all like, you know, we're gunned up, man. So we're going, okay, cool, 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 cool. Now, the first thing we thought is, man, if they had a bunch of computer servers outside of the man's purview of you don't have a warrant and you can't serve an extradite and whatever, I'm going, yeah, freedom, man, rock and roll. So you guys did go down that road. Tell us about it.
Well, it was fascinating. I was approached by an American consortium, Sean, What was his bloody name? Sean Hastings, a guy called Sean Hastings approached me and by email and told me about his ideas and everything else. So I had a meeting with him. I mean, I thought a server was someone that served up alcohol and food in a restaurant. I knew nothing about it at all. I'm from the wrong generation, unfortunately. So anyway, I quickly got to learn what it was all about. It was really interesting. So he came out in a helicopter and we talked and took some photographs. And then I got to meet a guy called Avi Friedman, who was the main investor, very good friend of mine these days. And it was fascinating. So we off we went. We put generators out there and servers out there and had microwave links and satellite links and just running around getting all the bits and everything else. It was absolutely fascinating. So, yeah, we got it all up and running, and we had quite a few servers. And we were hosting online gaming and things like that.
And then what happened?
Then what happened? Then what happened is, I believe that was about the time the Soviet Union broke down, the internet bubble thing kind of burst. It was a struggle getting money out of people to pay their accounts.
But what year was this?
I guess it was like 2001 or 2000.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you have a criterion or rules about kinds of information that you wouldn't host?
Well, they actually wanted it totally free, which is a great libertarian idea. But I said no PDF files, no snuff movies, no harvesting of body organs. They weren't really happy with that because they went against their libertarian views. But I have to say, you know, if you're going to be a state, you have to act like a state, and you have a responsibility to the international community. And you know, there are certain things that you just don't need to be.
Well, you know, if you're going to be a libertarian, you can also act like a libertarian. They're your servers. You can tell people they can't use them.
No, see, that's a deal. We're hardcore anarchists.
I tell you, I had one day I get this email from a guy in New York, and he's a pedophile. It's nothing to do with servers, but it was the same time, and it was all brought up by the same thing. And he said, we'd like to, you're a libertarian, or some other word, same sort of describing what we're talking about, you know, freedom and this, that, and the other. He said, me and my friends, we got this club and we like having young boys, young children involved, and we'd like to have a party every month out on Sealand and have children there. And, you know, like, I mean, he was wow. A pedophile, right? You know, and he's asking me to get involved with this kind of shit.
Yeah, so no, he was a plant.
Right?
You think so? He was a man, right?
That could have been a trap.
So anyway, I
although you also could have invited him out to Sealand and then just kicked him over the edge into the ocean.
You know what? Don't think I didn't actually think about that one. But I actually emailed he was in New York. I emailed the New York police, and Detective Monahan or something emailed me back, and they were right on the case. It all went quiet after that, so I'm sure they sorted it out. You don't know with these things.
Yeah, they didn't. They sorted out like the, you know, London police chief sorted out. They ignore it, get paid off, do whatever. I mean, this is, no, you can get started on that. But you, as a sovereign state, and it's your...
The trouble is with all the libertarian stuff and what you just comment you just made. I mean, you know, we don't really know, do we? We like to think there's a bit of a conspiracy theory going on. It makes the world that much more interesting, but... I don't know, you know? I don't know.
I've been covering, I'm 55, I've been covering this stuff a long time. It's amazing what gets swept under the rug. But it's starting to come out now, so that's better. I mean, with investigations of just people and the internet, it's coming out.
I'm 64, right? I'm 64, so I'm a little bit up on you on this. But I will tell you something I found quite interesting. When I researched my book, I was going up to the government records office at Kew Gardens quite a lot. And in England, in the UK, they have a thing called the 30-year ruling. And it's been around, I suppose, 20, 30 years now, this ruling. And what it is any government documents have to be released after 30 years, unless they're extremely bad, right? So I'd go up there, and I found some really interesting stuff in my book in the 30-year ruling, because obviously there's really interesting stuff going on behind the scenes. But there was also quite a few papers with notes in there saying, destroyed in 1970, whatever. Quite a few just stickers in the files, huge files of government stuff, police stuff, navy stuff, military intelligence. There were quite a few bits of paper and taken out and destroyed. They were that sensitive, you know? So that's not exactly freedom of information, is it?
No. Well, tell me about the, are you still providing computer server services, or did that stop, or what was some of the high and low points? Did, you know, a government come out with a ship and want to explain it to you, or we're going to freaking look at this gang's books and records, whether you like it or not? So tell us your experience with that.
No, nobody came out and looked at a record and books and records. It wasn't like that. I mean, we did what we saw ourselves as legally able to do, and we did it, and no one bothered us at all, you know. It was a fascinating time. I mean, its only failing was the fact that the people involved, the American partners, had a bit of a falling out amongst themselves. They also, I didn't know they were falling out with me, but they weren't happy with the fact that I wouldn't allow every kind of freedom in the world, you know. I mean, for instance, I don't know where you guys stand on this one, but they wanted to do online streaming of films, you know, pirated films. And as a guy that's written a book himself, you know, I'm thinking all that effort I put into writing that book, and I've got to tell you, it took me 15 years to write it. I did stop and start many times, but it, you know, it was done over 15 years, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And I wouldn't want someone just stealing it and putting it on the internet, although they probably have already. So, you know, I think if you harvest films off the film industry and pirate them and put them out there in the marketplace, then the film industry will die, and then we won't have films to watch. And then what are we going to do over nighttime?
I know that's the argument. I mean, I'm sure you've heard the libertarian other side of, you know, intellectual property argument. What your instance has demonstrated is that when you do find someone such as yourself that, you know, they create their own platform, they go out in their ship, they have it, they do it anyway, because I got a streaming thing, you know, sitting under my smart TV right now. I can watch anything, anytime, anywhere, for anything, you know, whether I do or not is, you know, whatever. But this is, you know, I can see the value of just being able to make your own decisions like Michael has. It's his property. He can do whatever the hell he wants, whether he wants to provide these services to pirates or not to. It's his decision. Yeah, see, that's the very libertarian part about that. They mean, sit there and argue all they want about what their philosophy is, and go, yeah, get your own damn platform and do what you want.
So it's a fortress, but it's not even that. I mean, I don't know. There's a Hollywood film possibly there will be very soon in the making. Like, you know, I've sold the film rights, and I think, why should I not profit out of all the blood, sweat, and tears that I put into this, my life story? And I've only got one life story. I'm not making dozens.
No, I understand. I know the argument. We've been over it a gazillion times. But I tell you, it's always, you know, Mel Brooks, the yogurt, man, where the real money's made in merchandising.
Well, look, in a way, I'm a poacher turned gamekeeper, because my father, when he had the pirate radio station, I mean, the reason that the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company, didn't have pop music for the kids to listen to was, they said they couldn't afford the performing rights fees. You know, every time they airplay something, they have to pay so many pence at the time to pay for it. They said it would be too expensive, like playing pop music all day long. But with the stations outside the limits, they used to just play everything. But the interesting thing about that was, with music, and I don't believe it would be the same with films, with music, the more the kids heard it on the radio, the more they would go out to the record shops and buy the records, as they were at the time.
Merchandising. Yeah.
Merchandising. And the record labels, the companies, every morning at the office would turn up a pile of records. Please keep promoting these, you know? So they were all free, and they were throwing them at us. Whereas with films, and then, of course, Hollywood's going mad now, stopping people, you know, stealing intellectual right.
No, those days are gone. It's already over. They don't, whatever. It's just, that's the way it is. But the pirating days, you know, being a young kid back then, you know, doing this, that had to be heady. You were the hero, and your dad wasn't the family of, and we got in freedom of the airwaves, and we're playing some rock and roll and whatnot. You know, that, man, you had to be pretty proud of yourself back then.
Well, I think looking back over the years, I mean, it's funny because I spend most of my time in the UK now when I'm not traveling. I don't spend so much time on the sea land. But there are people locally that know me all my life. They don't really know what I've done in my life. And when I published my book a little while ago, people were reading it going, I never believe what you did. You should be alive still, you know? I mean, this guy's not dead, I don't know. Because we just did some really, really interesting stuff over the years. But I never really talked about it.
What's it, Donna, do you have his book? Okay, you have a book in print now, right?
Well, yeah. Okay. Holding the Fort.
Holding the Fort.
What? Oh.
Holding the Fort by Michael Sealand.
Okay, hold on a second. What?
I don't have it.
Okay, put it in the show archive. Go ahead and I'm sure it's got an Amazon thing. Or you sell? Is it available on Amazon or something?
It's on Amazon as a hardback. It's on our website, sealandgov.org.
Yeah, go ahead and put it to sealand.org and find the book up here where the shop is and put that up, and we'll pimp the book when we come back. And for me doing that, can I have one?
Yes.
Donna, send him a request with our address and everything. Yeah. No. This is awesome. And say, I tell you what, God, I can go order some stuff, I guess. Yeah, I want to get some goodies.
It's on Kindle as well, by the way.
Nah, I want to hold it. I want to be able to hold it up to the audience on the video and say, looky, 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 I have this and you don't have one. No. Go get it.
At the end of this, whatever, email me an address to send it, and I'll get her up and send you a copy.
Yeah? All right. Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Well, she's sending you an email, and we'll get it taken care of. But this is, we'll go over some of the stuff that we can buy here, too. All right, we're coming back. Here we go.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Become a lord, lady, or baroness for, £60. £29 to £59, select the options. It's, whether you get gold leaf writing on your thing or what. I mean, there's all kinds of different options here. Become a count or countess. £199.99. Join the Knights of the Sovereign Military Order of Sealand. Woo!
Cool.
Are we having fun with this? I mean, how much crap? This is.
So, if my dad's a lord, does that make me a prince? Is it like a hereditary title, or does he have to die first? Do I inherit the title?
It's not a hereditary title.
No. Oh, okay. I've got to buy my own.
No, it's got. You give Sealand some money title. That's how all it works. Right. That's it, which is awesome.
You are supporting the liberty that you claim to support. Oh, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, here we go.
Huge amount of supporters.
Now, what is your most popular item here? We got coffee mugs. I want that coffee mug. That's cool. I love Sealand. So now you have a lot of these opportunities to, cash in on this stuff. Cool. But I'm going, what is the most popular thing? What do people want more than anything? A coffee mug, a T-shirt? They want a thing to put on their wall? I mean, what do you think is most popular?
I think the titles are the most popular things. I think so. I mean, we do lots of mugs and key rings and this, that, and the other. My book, of course. My son always tells me off for promoting my book. But,
Holding the Fort by Michael of Sealand. £9.99, which is, I don't know, what's the exchange rate now? Like $12 or something. But the, depends on the rate. But this is available on Donna. You go to the archive and you look at, into the second hour of today, February 28th, 2017, and you'll see in the archive the links to the book on Amazon you can buy and to their Sealand shop. Just go and get Holding the Fort. Now, he just told us in the break that he sold the movie rights. So this is it a studio in America or in Europe somewhere? Or who's doing it?
It is a studio in America, in the right place in America as well, I have to tell you.
Was it Arizona? Okay, where is it? Who's doing it?
Well, it's in Hollywood. But I can't really talk about it right now because it's up to them when they. But it's all proper people and proper directors, and even I've heard of these people.
Oh, hell yeah! This is gonna be awesome. You gotta have a big giant screening on Sealand.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, we're going there.
Well, I rather thought Los Angeles, but anyway, yeah, the sun shines a bit more in Los Angeles. I gotta tell you why I wrote the book, because years ago, in about 2000, I sold the film rights the first time round to Warner Brothers. And a friend of mine, Sean Sorensen, it's due to his involvement in the film that he became a great friend of mine over the years. He wrote a film script, and he said, "Man, it's a love story." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, he said, you know,
your dad and your mom. I saw it too.
My dad and my mom, and it was my mom's birthday when he declared independence. So what a cool present to give her, the title of princess, which is really nice." I said, "But man, over the years, so much has happened. Blood, sweat, tears, violence, really dangerous shit's gone on, you know?" And he said, no, man, it's a love story." I said, "No, it's not. It's like more of a Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon, humor and violence and this and that." "No, man, it's a love story." I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, if that sells films, you do that script and I will sit down and write the book." And that is why I sat and wrote the book, because it is an adventure story.
Yeah, you know, I tell you, Braveheart was a love story too.
Yes, part of it. Yeah.
So yeah, Donna's like, "Oh yeah, I love Braveheart." You know, it's like if the man takes me out, I'm counting on you to go kick ass. You know, I'm like, okay. You know, so this is a fascinating story. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm glad we got to meet you, because you know, hold on, at the end of the show, we'll tell you some of our pirate stuff, why you're of interest to us, because we're doing, you know, a lot of the same thing, but instead of it being a place, they have these airships now. Now we're making a pirate ship that flies, you know, these big airships. And that's right. The whole concept is that a lot of what you learned, you know, what's the jurisdiction if I'm, you know, 12,000 feet over the Pacific? Now what? I mean, you know, it's
You know, I mean, everybody loves a pirate in so much as, I mean, when pirate radio first came about, it was the British government that thought they were demeaning the radio stations by calling them pirate radio stations.
Yeah, you would have paid for that.
It was the best bit of marketing ever. I mean, you've never, you know, if you'd paid them for the marketing, I mean, pirate radio, all the kids, they would, wow, they're pirates, you know? I mean, I you know, libertarians in the States, I've been a DEFCON. I've been out and when I went there, I had a great time going out on the ranges, and part of them are like gun nuts, aren't they? And we went out to the Arizona desert and fired all sorts of weapons and that. That was interesting. They gave me a badge that said the unfree, because, like, from the UK, I didn't tell them about Sealand, but from the UK, because of the licensing laws and everything else, they consider it unfree. But I had a great time there.
Okay, now, wait. When you, on Sealand, you know, what are the laws that you are governed by, your own? I mean, you know, I can put a howitzer, you know, I get my own anti-aircraft if I need a 50 caliber machine gun because I can, or, you know, a Cobra attack helicopter. I mean, what's the limits, anything?
Well, yes, of course there's a limit. I can't allow you to do that. You might be
No. I don't mean what you allow. I mean anybody else would prevent you.
Oh, no. Oh, no, who's going to stop me?
So you just decided, you know, it's not, you know, because don't need to, don't care. And, you know, but I'm very interested in has been any of the latest rulings by any court or anything where you are mentioned. Anything?
No, everybody's quite happy, and we just jog along nice and quietly. They don't bother us, and we don't bother them. And we're responsible enough not to carve up the North Sea with machine gun fire and everything, so and howitzer fire, so everybody's happy.
Awesome. Well, you know, it's right up until you start getting, you know, you do the factory of the block. Oh, here's a good one. Voluntary, peaceful interaction between consenting adults of I have a brothel.
You want your robot brothel?
Oh, yeah. We just had a story yesterday in Barcelona. They're opening the first, you know, sex doll robot android brothel.
Why would you go all the way to Barcelona for that?
It's marketing, man. I got a robot brothel. Anyway, so this is, that's another thing. You know, has a brothel crossed your mind, or an opium den or what?
You will be very surprised to know that these things actually have crossed our mind over the years, but that's probably just as far as it's gone. But yeah, of course, there's all been all sorts of humorous or whatever, or even sometimes serious talk about these things. But yeah, why would there not be?
Yeah, you know, I'm just at freedom is amazing. You know what it will produce, especially when they don't have it anywhere else. You know, yeah. it's just like it's a magnet. It draws to you. And what is the biggest media kicks that you get? How is it all of a sudden you're going, damn, the web page just went stupid for some reason somewhere? Where does that usually come from? Is it United States? Is Asia getting involved? Where's your traffic come from?
Well, we're starting to get more and more traffic from Asia, from China even. I don't know how they're managing that one. And strange enough, I'm going to China in a few weeks' time, so maybe I'll have a look from the inside out. But you can't, when you're in China, you can get the Sealand website up, but you can't get inside it, so to speak. You can't buy stuff, you can't look at content. They're restricted, aren't they? So that's going to be interesting for me.
Well, but China's building their own freaking islands. They're just doing Sealand.
Well, I know. You think I'm not keeping an eye on that as well?
Yeah, build me one. I got.
You know. And I have a Chinese girlfriend as well.
Woo! Does she speak Mandarin or Chinese dialect of anything?
She speaks Mandarin and Cantonese.
Score.
Yeah.
Score. Good for you, man. So your life, being...
And she was in the Chinese army for 15 years as well. How about that? Mainland China. That's really cool.
No, that's too cool. Because you're going to... That's inspiring and, sharing with people. And once they find out and they get access to, and then their certain browser, they scanned around and said in Sealand, and man, boom, they go, wait a minute. I can do my own island? what about cryptocurrency mining? Has that ever come across your radar?
Do you know what has come across my radar many times? At one point, I thought to myself, this is really interesting. I'll get some of this Bitcoin stuff. So I invest £300 in Bitcoin, and then I read in the paper one day.
You read in the paper one day what?
It went up to like a value of £1,000. I said to my son, go on, cash it in. Let's have the money out of it. Anyway, guess what? I'm out of raiding my wallet, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I don't. There's so many. We're heavy into cryptocurrencies and what's happening. But the thing that makes Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies valuable is the same thing that makes Sealand valuable. It's outside of, they can't control. It's not, and the man's not, and kind of Sealand. See, it's just, you should have a miner on Sealand just out of principle. This has been a really excellent introduction to you, Michael. We've been paying attention to you for, what is it, like 17 years now?
Yeah, at least.
And Davi even longer, and your dad's like a lord of on the database or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My dad collects titles like that, too. He's a minister in the Universal Life Church and all sorts of stuff.
Okay, we're at the end of the show. All right, this is the one thing, Michael. The databases that you have and all these guys that do you keep those records? And is the man, willing to give you a little cash for, send us the records of or something?
I love that question. No, we don't keep the records. We don't have the information. Everything has been destroyed.
Nah, 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 nah. All right, cool. Cool. I want a Sealand identity card. Damn it. That's why I'm going to do it right now. I click on here. I'll buy the identity card, and you send me a book. Add the best full name required. Ernest and Cox. So this movie rights that you sold, the most recent one to Hollywood, how long ago was that?
I was in Los Angeles literally this time last year, sorting it all out and sitting with them and with the director and the writer.
And how long ago? I'm sorry, when did you say that was?
It was this time. It's precisely this time last year.
Man, so it's recent. This is awesome. And is there, you seem like you're having a good time. This is work. That's a good story. I got the book out. They're doing a movie. All right, the legacy. Mom and dad kind of, did their thing. We're making sure everybody knows and inspiration to everybody around. And it's cool. But, how long were you ever in a depression, or it's kind of, man, this just sucks, or I can't believe they're doing what, or damn it, Dad, I don't want to live out here on this freaking platform anymore. I mean, at what time, did you have like some negative experiences there?
Well, I guess it'd be fair to say when I was 14 years old and I was out on the boat one day and I was due to go back to boarding school in North Wales a few days later. And my dad was having staff troubles. And I said, I'll stay out there on the boat with this other guy. And Dad said, no, you've got to go back to school. Well, I was in this really expensive, but really bloody boarding school in Wales. And it always seemed to be snowing or freezing cold. And there was no heat or anything like that. Mind you, there wasn't out on Sealand, right? So I said, I don't want to stay out here. So I thought 6 months adventure. But what I didn't realize was 50 years down the road, and it is our 50th anniversary on the 2nd of September this year, we'd still be going. But we've had our flag carried at the top of Mount Everest and all sorts of other interesting things done that some countries have never done, and countries have come and gone over this period of time. So, it's been an interesting little project.
So if I were to look on a listing of, is there some database or United Nations list of whatever, and it goes, Sealand, Somalia, Swahili, are you listed anywhere? Not that I care, but,
Not that I care either, I can assure you. But I'm sure we're listed on all sorts of databases.
Yeah, no, I mean a public recognized, the country of or something. The thing is I don't care because I don't care. But it's cool that that you can self-proclaim and not get a Hellfire missile. I mean, we're not there yet, So the more, if you're going to be on a list, be on top of the list. It's safer there.
Well, yeah, but I think you also have to understand that Sealand is a fortress island, and it's based in the North Sea, and it's off of the coast of the United Kingdom. And unlike France, unlike Italy, unlike the United States, particularly of America, they're not going to just come storming in machine gun everybody. They're kind of a little bit more laid back about the whole thing. They have hundreds of years of running an empire behind them, and they just kind of just sit back and wait for it all to go away or happen on its own. They're not proactive, and they're not violent. The police aren't armed. The military have to explain themselves pretty much for everything. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm sitting here checking out all my goodies update basket. See, while you're talking to me, I'm spending money. There you go. All right, how long before delivery, you think? Where is fulfillment done out of?
Where is what?
How they process it and mail it in the inventory. Is it on Sealand or, in Taiwan or what?
Oh, the inventory for the inventory for the shop.
No, I know, but I mean, somebody's putting it in a package. Are they doing it on Sealand and dropping it down to a boat that goes
on Sealand? Yeah, on Sealand. Yeah.
Wow, how many people are staying there now?
There's anywhere between 50 people, and the least that's been there is one person. So there's two people there at the moment. It's just up and down depending on what's happened. This time of year, the weather's fairly inclement, so no one's going to come near the place.
Now, this is awesome. Thank you for spending time with us. Do you mind if we call you? We contact you again. You think we'll be able to talk to you?
Sure. If I'm not traveling or something.
Yeah. No, we got, we do freaking 3 hours a day, man. I mean, we got, plenty options to come, because if there's news and you need to get it out, and we're the members of the Liberty community here in America that we're known for this kind of stuff. And I'm just so glad that you came on and talked to us, because I've been kind of giving stories and talking about and reading things about you forever, and getting it out of your mouth is a hell of a lot better than me, pretending I know what's going on. So, and then of course the book, I'd like to, give me that book. I tell you what, I read your book, come on after the book, talk about the book and all the stuff that's happened.
That's a ticket. Yeah, you'll get lots of stories out of the book. Yeah, I'll be happy to do that, sure.
That'd be awesome. Michael of Sealand, thank you very much for spending time with us, sir.
Thank you, Ernest.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.